my intention going forward is the same. Keep cooking, keep learning, keep putting it out there. Find collaborators who allow me to do my thing so that I can actually introduce something new to diners.
Hey there, it's Danny Vallant here with you for another episode of Dirty Linen. Always love getting the headphones on, putting the microphone close to my face and chatting to an interesting guest. Today we are going on a real journey. We are heading to one of my favorite places in the world, India. I am such a fan of Indian cuisine and culture. Definitely wouldn't consider myself an expert. There are so many regional cuisines to explore and discover. And I know that if I spent the rest of my life learning about Indian cuisine, well, that job would never be done. But today we are going to learn a little bit more from Anjali Ganapati. Anjali is going to talk to us about Coorg cuisine. Anjali, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Hi, Danny. Thank you for having me.
So good to have you on the show. We met recently when you came to Melbourne for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and you cooked the food from your part of India for a couple of events. How was your trip?
Oh my God. I'm still recovering from the whole experience. It was such a wonderful reception. I don't know if I could have gotten this kind of a welcome in any other country, to be honest. I did my pop-up at the Toddy Shop with Misha Tropp, and it was amazing. We were really surprised with how quickly the tickets sold, and just how open everyone and, you know, every chef, all the chefs in the kitchen were to a new cuisine and the kind of questions they were asking. And it was just wonderful. Everyone was open and excited and just interested in Coorg and what the food represents and where it comes from, and, you know, asking questions about the flavors and the ingredients. So for someone like me who's a cook and whose main job is to introduce people to this cuisine, it was a wonderful reception. I loved it. I loved working there.
Well, thank you for bringing your skills, talents and heritage to us in Melbourne. I mean, there's an amazing Indian diaspora in Australia. It's so many people from all over India that are here. But those who aren't from India, I think, you know, many of us are starting to get our head around that Northern Indian food is different to Southern Indian food. But I think there are still a lot of subtleties that we have to learn about. So, I mean, give us a sense of your cuisine. What is Coorg? How can you explain it?
So Coorg, or Coorgu, actually Coorg is the anglicized version of Coorgu. Coorg cuisine is from the district of Coorgu, and Coorgu is in the state of Karnataka. Karnataka is north of Kerala, and I'm taking Kerala as a point of reference because Kerala is more well known for their Ayurveda and also as a tourist destination. So Karnataka has multiple cuisines. It's like every 200 kilometers, the cuisine will shift a little bit. And the district that I come from is a plantation town. So originally we were paddy farmers, and we now are known for coffee and spices. And the cuisine comes from basically it's everything that's happening in the environment, in nature. Our community basically, we're hunters, foragers, farmers, and we are ancestor worshippers. So everything we have is connected to the land and to the environment. So, for example, one of the dishes that I made this time was bamboo shoot, and people don't know that we get bamboo shoot. Don't really identify bamboo shoot with our side of the world, in terms of at least Southern India. But it's very popular. There's rivers, there's valley, there's forest, and everything that is on the table reflects what's happening at that time of the year. So you can literally go to a Coorg kitchen and you can tell looking at the ingredients, okay, it's this particular, sometimes even which week of the year it is. Like there is a medicinal herb that grows at a particular time during the first week of August. and it's harvested, and then we have a festival around that, and it's a medicinal herb. And so when you look at that, you know, okay, it's probably the first week of August. So it's really specific to what's happening around us. Even the pork, which originates from wild boar hunting, which is actually our most popular dish, the pandikari. So everything that shows up on our plate is exactly what's happening in your backyard, in the environment, in nature. Our farms and forests merge. There's a lot of wildlife. I hope I haven't rambled too much. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to paint a picture for you. The land is, it's beautiful. It's hills. There's coffee plantations. There's spices. There's wild edible herbs and fruits and vegetables. And of course, you have wildlife as well, which is shows up on the plate.
Oh, so beautiful. You are definitely painting a picture, Anjali. I mean, tell us about your childhood. Like, what were some of your food memories? You know, did you learn to cook at a young age? What were some of the flavors, sounds, smells that you remember?
So my father was a fighter pilot. A lot of, actually, our community is also very closely associated to the defense. So if you weren't, at least up to my father's generation, if you weren't a planter, you were joining the defense. And I read that that's also because our community was known as the fighting forces for the Maharaja of Karnataka. So because we were living close to the forest and, you know, we were very good at using our armory and things like that. And we're also, we kind of became like the martial race or the warrior clan. So if you weren't being a planter, a great option was to join the military. So my father was a pilot. We traveled a lot. And when we weren't traveling, we were taking vacations and going to our family home in Coorg. And for me, the fascination, I've always been interested in food, mostly from an eating perspective. Like I enjoy eating and exploring new tastes and flavors and ingredients. And I think, again, that goes back to childhood where we were traveling every 2 or 3 years. We were in a different town. And the first way for a kid to introduce, I mean, the first sort of way to introduce yourself to a new town is how are you feeding yourself? Like, what's the meal on the table? It gives you an idea of what the topography is, how people use ingredients. You know, certain towns, the food was so spicy because they'd say it actually helped to cool the body because the climate was very warm. So things like that, introduction to new towns was through food. And so when we'd come home also, it was always a feast because it was summer vacations. All of the aunts, uncles, cousins, everyone was getting together. And Coorg being a farming community, and at least the families that were living in Coorg who we'd meet, always had something that they'd bring to the table. So, you know, someone would bring like a particular preserve or a jam or a jelly or a juice. So somebody would bring rice from their farm. So someone would bring fruits that were growing, someone bring coffee or spices. And it was always this medley of just so many interesting smells and flavors and colors on the table. And there was just, we were just basically moving from one meal to the next. So you'd have a massive breakfast and there'd be the mid-morning, you know, tea or coffee with snacks, and we'd move into like lunch, and then lunch would move into coffee, and then coffee would happen, would finish, and then by 7:30, 8, you're having dinner. So there was always a full table in my grandparents' place. And the kitchen had this smell. It's so strong and vivid in my memory even now. The kitchen had a storeroom and there were sacks of rice over there. And every morning, like, you'd wake up to the smell of coffee being roasted. And it was just, you know, these memories, I mean, I can't remember what I did day before yesterday, but these memories are so clear to me. Yeah, and so those are my food memories. I mean, it's across the country. But for Coorg, it was always about when we'd come down and say, okay, I hope this aunt is going to make that particular pickle. I can't wait to have it, because you wouldn't get that ingredient anywhere else. And so we have things like tiny little wild mangoes, which are the size of eggs. And we make this tangy, sweet, spicy gravy with it, which is one of my favorite things to eat. We have tiny little paddy fish, which my grandma would make pickles and curries with it. And you just have it with plain steamed rice. Things like that I missed when we were not in Coorg. And so when my father retired and we settled down in Bangalore, which is the city closest to Coorg for education reasons, we settled over there. I think being a little closer to Coorg, having more access, I just started to enjoy it a lot more, ask a lot more questions. But I didn't cook a lot because my mom was very clear. She was like, you better get good grades because you're going to need to get a job when you grow up. So not a lot of cooking, but a lot of eating.
Oh my goodness, you do paint such a delicious picture, a picture that is also has a beautiful fragrance. I can smell that coffee and those sacks of rice as well. I'd love you to explain a bit more about wild boar, because I think, you know, if I think about Indian food, you know, pork is not something that I think of immediately. Like, tell us more about this culture and about the key pork dish that is so central to your cuisine.
Again, Coorg used to, our farms and forests were practically merged. This was, I would say, as recently as, say, 15 years back. In fact, our estate in Coorg is very close to the reserve forest. So we do have a lot of animal life. You have elephants passing through, and they've been migrating through that state, through that route for generations. So they don't disturb you. There is some, you know, you have wildlife like tigers, there are leopards, wild boar also, porcupine. There's a large variety or a large number of species of birds that are also in Coorg. So there's a lot of wildlife. And because you're living close to the forest, hunting also is part of our culture, although not that much happens anymore. And hunting wild boar is also now considered illegal. But it was just a way of life. You were hunting for the clan or for your family, and it would be shared, and then it was on the table. The key part, though, that as a cook now, the way I view it is the key part to the pork, which is, of course, farmed pork today, not wild boar, is the vinegar that we use in the curry. It's made with a wild fruit, which grows in Coorg, as well as actually grows in the Western Ghats. And it's also, you'll also find it in parts of Indonesia, is what I read. This particular fruit is called Gasinya Gumigutta. That's the scientific word for it. We call it Kachipuli. It's harvested around July, August, towards September. And then what they do is they take the fruit, it's stored till it actually starts to get overripe. And there's a juice that sort of oozes out of it. It's not a very pretty juice. It looks slightly grayish brown. And then that's collected and reduced over a wood fire in an earthen pot. And then you get this deep, it's almost like an indigo bluey black color. And that's basically the souring agent that we use to make our pork curry. So if you look at the spices that we're using, there's an interesting blend of roasted spices we use, but it's really the vinegar that we add towards the end that makes it very unique. And for us, this particular souring agent is sort of that one ingredient that if you say Kachapuri, you know it's coming from our region. It's like everybody has, like you say balsamic, you think of a certain place, you think of mustard oil, you think of a certain place. So it's like that. For us, this is our ingredient, which we identify with as very, really quintessentially Coorg food. And that's what makes it unique. And it's delicious. It's sour. It's smoky. It's a little bit sweet also because it comes from the fruit. And, you know, I mean, pork to me is the tastiest meat. So you can't go wrong.
Oh, my goodness. My mouth is watering. I really want to eat. I really want you to make that for me one day. Tell us about, I mean, I understand your passion and I understand now a bit more about the heritage and where that passion comes from, but talk to us about what you're doing now, how you turned your engagement with your heritage into, I guess, a job, you know, something that you're trying to share it with other people. How did that come about?
So I started cooking seriously after I got married because I never had to step into a kitchen before that. And the priority, like I said, my parents were very strict. They said, you have to get good grades, you got to get a good job, you know, and cooking wasn't really seen as a career. I never considered it as a career. And I honestly, I was not a very good cook. I just picked it up because my sister and I actually did this. We decided to take part in a flea market one weekend, where a friend actually said, look, we're starting this flea market and we want to fill a bunch of stalls. You guys can do whatever you want. The space is yours. And we said, okay, let's do the pork curry because that's something that everyone can identify with Coorg. And we did that. And I had a full-time job at the time. But there was something in that moment when we had people coming in, they were excited about the gravy. And we just did one dish. There was something, I don't think I've ever felt that at any other job. I was excited. I was feeling creative. I was so proud to put this out there. And from there on, I just started doing it on a regular basis, the market. And then I started to get orders. And it was, again, like I was married and I was living, you know, outside of my parents' home. So I also wanted to learn more. And so that's when I started asking for recipes. And I started practicing at home and I started adding one dish at a time to the menu and started taking orders as well. And it just sort of grew organically from there. And it was because of the cooking and the digging into, you know, old recipe books and talking to my grandmother and my aunt and eating at in other people's homes and like really sort of going into those food memories and saying, I remember eating this and it smelled that way and it tasted this way and what's that recipe? I started to see the pattern between seasonality and about 8 years back, I think there was a stark shift in, not even shift, it sort of became like a regular feature where people were just saying things like, oh, this year the passion fruit harvest wasn't that good, or there was too much rain, or it was too hot, or there was no mushrooms for some reason. And now, and of course, it's global warming, it's a large, the whole world is experiencing it right now. And I was experiencing it in this way where I wasn't able to eat the food that I grew up eating. And for me, so much of that is my identity. And I love eating this food. And I wanted to put it out there because I didn't see enough representation. There was some, but I felt like we could do better. And especially because of my background as a child of the Indian Air Force, having traveled to so many places and seeing, especially I think the North Indian food celebrated outside. And so popular and so well marketed. I was like, where's my town? Like, why does no one know of us? So I started cooking and started to try to talk about what was happening in the environment back home. And we're also a very small community and we are farmers. So for us, every little shift is devastating. So today, what I try and do through these meals is create, you know, Danny, like you said, a visual of what the land looks like, what's growing there, what's living there, what is the life like for us, and put that on a plate. And the medium is food, but the conversation also, I'm trying to draw a little more attention and say, hey, we're also experiencing this along with everyone. And I don't have a solution, but I feel like this is my way of drawing some attention to something that is very close to my heart, which is the environment. And it's interconnected. I mean, you can't say food and then environment. It's the same. It's all the same. You know, we're all part of the same planet.
Wow. I mean, that's so well said and so profound. I think, you know, I wanted to talk to you about why it's important to preserve small regional cuisines, but I think you've sort of answered that already. It's like because they can really speak to global issues or, you know, the whole. But I mean, how do you reflect on that?
I think the first time I was a lot in my head because I felt very alone doing what I was doing because no one really considered it as a real career. And I have my own, you know, imposter syndrome going on. I was like, oh, am I a real chef? Because I haven't gone to culinary school. You know, those kind of questions. I think I'm not beating myself as much as I used to when I first started out. But I went to the Parabera Forum in 2019 in Istanbul. And I think that was the first time where I felt a sense of community with the people in the room. Parabera Forum is a platform started by Maria Cannibal, and there was Claudia Roden who came on the stage and she said, you know, to be universal, you have to be local. And that hit home for me. And there were women coming up there like me who were, some of them are professionally trained, gone to culinary school, studied all the five big cuisines. And there were some people like me who were self-taught and just had knowledge of a cuisine that was passed down through generations, but not documented in a formal manner. And everyone was saying the same thing, is that we are losing, I think, you know, it literally takes me back to this video of Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall, where everyone's eating like food which comes out of a tube or something. That's the fear. It's like all of us are going to be, there's going to be no nutrition, there's going to be no diversity, there's no culture, there's no history, and what are we without that? And I identify those things through food. And everyone in the room was speaking a similar language, and we were talking about soil. So that was the first time for me that I really felt I was able to articulate what I was trying to do through cooking.
Mm. I mean, it's definitely worth pointing out that Potobera Forum is about women's views and voices on major food issues. So you definitely mentioned some amazing women like Maria Cannavale and Claudia Rodin, but it is, I guess, about getting women together to speak about important issues. I mean, let's talk more about that. You know, like what importance should we give to the fact that you're a woman? Like, do you think there is something particularly, I don't know, matrilineal or matriarchal or feminine about looking at food in the way that you are?
I can speak from my personal experience and the household and the family and the people and the women that I was exposed to and within my unit. The women were the nurturers. The women were the women who had the scientific knowledge, the bulk of it at least, as to why you were combining certain ingredients together. If I go back to Kachapuli, my father told me the story of how when they were kids, the weather used to be really harsh in Cork. Of course, now it's become much warmer, but it was wet, windy, cold, damp all the time, musty. And when they'd catch a cold or if they'd feel cold, my grandmom would take kachapuli and mix it with limestone powder and rub it on their necks and chest. And it would, and they'd feel warm because they didn't have modern medicine at that point. So, or maybe they couldn't afford it, but one ingredient could go in several directions. There was a medicinal purpose. There's a nutritional value. You could preserve it. You could cook it fresh. You could make it into a beverage or a pickle and things like that. So for me, the way, yeah, roles, at least when I look back at my grandparents and my mother and, you know, the women in the family, the roles were of being nurturers and caretakers. So I think I kind of imbibed some of that also. I'm sure it's all deeply ingrained because you see that around you. And this information was passed down mainly to the girls. This is how you cook this, and this is how you eat that, and that's how you combine it. And even though I was not cooking a lot, I was mostly a nuisance, actually. My mom would tell me, she'd be like, you're just getting in the way, get out of the kitchen, you know. I've got three children, and we have to get this meal on the table, so quit running around and, you know, messing with things. But you, visually, you're taking in so much information. You're listening to things, you're eating things a certain way. And then I've sort of continued that in my own home now, so... Yeah, but I think also in India, like you said initially, there's such diversity, and it's the women that have sort of carried this information forward. That's how I view it, yeah.
I mean, we're in such an age of upheaval. I mean, there's always been people moving around the world, but I think, you know, globalization is a force that impacts all of us. I think, I don't know, like there's something nostalgic about the way you speak, but there's something also urgent about it and contemporary. I mean, just going back to, you know, this herb that's available only in the first week of August, but then, you know, changing weather patterns shifts that and disrupts it. And I feel like that's a cause of such instability in culture, perhaps a prompt for people to move somewhere else, whether it's, you know, to find work or to find, you know, medicine or education, whatever it might be. I mean, where are our anchors in this world?
Yes, you know, one of the conversations I was having with someone is that how do you make it sustainable and profitable for somebody to continue a certain way of life? Like even farming, like my father is a coffee planter now. After he retired, he went back to Coorg and now he's running his plantation. And because he's in a financially stable position because he's already retired, he's able to take certain risks and with how he does what he does. So he's focusing on soil, and the way he views it is like, you know, what's my legacy going to be? What am I going to leave my children? I'm going to leave them good soil. So what if they throw at it? Something nourishing and good comes from it. That's his point of view. But most households can't take that risk because you are feeding your family. You need to make your money. And so yeah, you go with trends, you go with what's selling. You know, I was told that India has over 3,000, had at least over 3,000 varieties of rice, but now documented rices and available rices is in a couple of hundred. And each rice had some value in terms of either it was nutritional value, commercial value, value going back into the land, like, you know, it brought certain mineral content to the soil. I mean, these are things that I'm slowly starting to read about and learn about because I'm interested in it. But this information is also being documented slowly in a more coherent manner. We were just talking about it. I said, okay, through food and through cooking, how can we make, is it possible to come up with some format where maybe there are ways to bring back some balance to what we're doing back home. Again, I'm only talking about Coorg because to me, it's such an ecosystem that reflects so many things because you've got so much coming from there. You know, you've got the vegetables, you've got the varieties of spices, you've got fruits, you've got wildlife. How do we preserve, how do we at least bring back some balance? You know, I don't see us living in the past. That's not possible in today's time. But maybe there needs to be a shift in policies and laws and, you know, over-farming, things like that. Like, we're losing our water, we're losing our trees, we're losing our wildlife, we're losing our health. And it's all interconnected.
Yeah, they're big questions. They don't get any bigger than that. Anjali, let's talk more about what it's like for you when you do this outreach, you know, to people who perhaps aren't familiar with Coorg cuisine, but they taste something, you make them a dish and you have that amazing vinegar in it, they taste that for the first time. What is that experience like for you and for them?
Oh my God. Oh, dang. Honestly, I think sometimes I'm almost in tears because the food that I cook, I didn't invent it. I'm cooking what I ate at home. At best, I probably play with, you know, spice levels or sweet levels and things like that. That's where my creativity comes in. But these are recipes that the community owns. And it's everybody. So for me, it's such pride and joy because I always thought it was exciting. For me, it was always interesting. But to see that now from someone who has no idea where it comes from or who we are, and just to enjoy the flavor. I think, you know, you get people interested in taste, then from there, you know, the story and the conversation grows. So my job, the way I view it, is to do justice to the food and to cook the best that I can, and hopefully people will love it because I think it's great. So yeah, I mean, when someone is happy with what they're eating and they're surprised, and I love the look of surprise, especially on people's faces, because everyone has a specific idea of what Indian food is like. So they're surprised when they taste pumpkin a certain way, or they taste poppy seed a certain way, or even the pork, to see pork on the menu, and they're just like, wait, you're Indian, like, how come you have pork on your menu? So it's just, I love answering these questions, and a lot of the questions sometimes I don't have answers to. So that gives me homework because I also want to learn and dig deeper. So it's lovely because it's a nice exchange of just interest in something that has a lot to offer. So I'm very proud to represent in whatever way I can. And of course, I'm always thinking about, you know, dinners at home, grandmom, her voice in my head a little bit. She was very strict also. I don't know why I keep saying strict, but they were all very regimented in their manner. So I remember her telling me that, you know, don't be afraid to make a mistake in the kitchen. There's no mistakes. Because I used to try so hard to make everything taste exactly the way she did. So it's nice for a cook to hear someone appreciate your food. But for me, it's really about just putting this out there so that it gives me a small window to talk about what's happening back home.
So beautiful. So what are your plans? Like, where do you want this journey to go?
I want this journey to go back to the community and environment. I want to work closely with the environment. And like I said, food is my medium. So if I can use that in some way to bring solutions, then I feel like that's where my heart is, and that then I'm doing a good job. So I am actually right now, I mean, even this conversation to be on a podcast with you, Danny, is huge for me. I've never done a podcast before. And I'm so excited to be asked these questions, because I know I don't get asked these questions a lot, but this is really what I want to talk about. So my intention going forward is the same. Keep cooking, keep learning, keep putting it out there. Find collaborators who allow me to do my thing so that I can actually introduce something new to diners and have these kind of conversations. And I'm also going to be working closer with, hopefully there will be something more long-term will come from it, but we're working on an idea of creating meals which can actually contribute back in some way a revenue to certain causes back home which we want to support. So wildlife and forestry and waters, saving water and things like that. So there are some plans, but nothing concrete yet. But I think it's just a matter of time before we figure it out and how we can do it better and present it to the world.
Anjali, I think you're an incredible ambassador for Coorg cuisine, but I think for so much more as well, just regional cuisines in general and why they're so important. I think we've touched on some really big issues today, and yeah, I think you're an amazing person to forge forward, you know, ask the hard questions, and you don't get 20 answers without asking the questions. So yeah, all power to you.
This is Dirty
Thank
Linen
you, Danny.
And I'm
Thank
Danny
you so
Ballant.
Much.
We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.
This is a Deep in the Weeds production.